Good evening, James McKenna here with my Science Hour for March 16th, 2023. And first of all, I apologize for missing last week's show. People wrote in and said, your show's not there. He said, yep, I know, I'm sorry. It just got to be, sometimes just everything happens at once. And I can count on maybe less than two hands the number of times I've missed this show in a 23-year history. And that was just one of those occasions. So there's just no show last week, and hopefully make up for it this week. But what I was going to do, what I announced for last week, and by the way, before I forget it, yes, the frequency for this show, for the WWCR airing, has changed to 9.350 megahertz. And those are the summertime frequency. That's the summertime frequency for this show. Because what happens, I'm right at the cusp at 6 o'clock in the evening. So right at when we hit this time of year around the 21st of March, which is the spring equinox, and what happens is the days start getting longer. So my show turns into daylight. In other words, daylight is present, and these frequencies of shortwave, some work better at nighttime and some work better in the daytime. So anyway, my wintertime frequency is going away, and the summertime frequency will go until we hit next October, sometime next fall. It usually happens also around the time when we change clocks, that insanity that happens in the United States where we change the hour for daylight savings time, which anyway, so from now on through summer, fall, my show frequency, only WWCR, by the way, does not affect any of the other places where this show may air, 9.350 megahertz. Okay. The topic I was going to concentrate on last week, and I will this week, is the insane amount of energy that we use. It's just absolutely unbelievable and totally unnecessary. We use so much energy, it's just unbelievable. You go out on the freeways and all day long, all night long, the cars are up and down the road. It's just, nonstop. And these are expendable resources, whether you like it or not. They talk about peak oil and things like that, which was a misnomer. We have vast amounts of petroleum. And, of course, the term fossil fuel is a misnomer because none of this fuel came from fossils or dinosaur bones or anything else. Total misnomer. The oil that we use came from comets passing by. That's literally where it came from. And the hydrocarbons in the comet tail came flooding in, and basically, even down where you go 18 miles down, the Earth has supplemented its size over the millions and billions of years, whatever. And so those pockets of oil are from past comet passages, and which, by the way, tells us that we have no idea how old Earth is. There's no real idea. These clowns that pick up a rock on the surface, make some kind of a measurement and say the world is 4.5 billion years old is just beyond absurd. Anyway, okay, but what I want to do tonight is give you a feeling for the amount of energy that we use. First of all, just a couple quick announcements. Let's look through the list here. There's a big effort now to get rid of mail-in voting. And the big issue with mail-in voting, of course, is that it's pure fraud. That you can stuff the ballot box, and you probably could have learned that in the grade school, that if you were having an election for a class president or something, if somebody could stuff the ballot box, well, gee, they could win. And so anyway, there's an effort before this election, which should have happened a long time ago, was to stop this lack of custody, it's called, between when people vote. And the cry goes out that, oh, what, it's not fair. Some people cannot get out and vote. Well, we make all kinds of amenities on election day that Tuesday that rolls around only every couple of years, and people can get off work, they can go vote, places of business will let you take off as long as it needs to go vote, etc. So it's not that big a deal to go vote. Seniors can vote at a lot of times where they are staying, so it's not an impossible task. Anyway, that's one thing. Also, last night, if you happen to be outside, you may have seen the Gamma Normid meteor stream. And so anyway, that I think there may be some remnants of that yet tonight. And we just had a mini solar storm, which caused some frequency distortion on some of the radio channels. So, and here, this is something, too. A listener wrote in, and I had a little back and forth conversation. And I guess the comment was more like, all of the things I've done in my life, just a comment about being impressed with all the things I've done in my life, etc., and travels. And but I'll tell you, I wouldn't be here today if I did not have a fleet. I'm an absolute fleet of guardian angels. I'm sure I don't. I may have a major one, but I think I've got about a dozen backups that handle all the situations as I wove my way through life to get to the point I'm at right now. But anyway, just I thought that was comical that people actually recognize that, they've done a lot of things in my life and come through a lot of difficult situations. I'll just bring up one, for example. I was driving down in southern Mexico. This is back in the early 1970s. And I had a Ford van, a very capable Ford van, for as vans went at the time. But it was still a rear-wheel drive, you know, the old-fashioned. I was driving on this mountain road, and it started to rain heavily, and I could see the road literally crumbling off the side of the mountain and falling into the abyss below as I drove. So there was, and it was one lane. And so I drove, and I finally got down to this valley. But, if I would have been a few minutes earlier, I wouldn't be talking to you today. I'd probably be still undiscovered down on the side of this mountainside someplace in southern Mexico. Anyway, that's just a little example of what kind of things that happened to me. So I'm sure there was some serious effort by my guardian angels taking care of my, just clearing the path, so to speak. Okay, anyway, here's a topic I wanted to cover. I've been meaning to cover this for a long time. And I am as much guilty of this. It's not a guilt thing, but I sit a lot. I work a lot. I work at the computer. I work at my desk, and so I spend a good deal of time there. But the unfortunate thing is it takes its toll, in an old guy like me. And I'm actually in pretty good health. But it does cause some things, and I'll explain these, and I'll explain the kind of things you can do to cure this, because we're getting out of winter, we're coming into springtime, and the people are starting to become active, and you probably notice a few aches and pains, especially in the back and things like that. So one thing that happens when you're working at a desk a lot, or sitting in a chair, that happens a lot in the wintertime, it's just comfortable to sit in a chair and watch TV, and you get up and walk to the kitchen, and you walk to the bedroom. Between the bathroom, the bedroom, and the kitchen, and the living room, that's your exercise for the winter, because it's just too ugly to get outside. Anyway, what happens when you're sitting there is your stomach muscles contract. They actually relax, and they become shorter. So when you stand up, they're pulling on you, and they're pulling you together like kind of like a scissors. And so what happens, you're bent over. Now your shoulders roll forward, now your head goes down, and if you do any work on a telephone, like most people do today, you're looking down, your head is bent over, so all of these all of these activities or lack of activity really causes you to be kind of hunched in the back. Your head sticks out. It causes an excessive amount of pulling on your back muscles. And then here at the same time, your stomach muscles are all contracted. So what do you do? Well, first of all, don't go out in the springtime and be the weekend warrior and do all kinds of physical things or climb ladders and try and paint the house up in the eaves and do all kinds of things or go golf and hit a 300-yard golf stroke, because it's just you can't do the same things you did in the fall before winter. So anyway, a couple things you can do is, first of all, lay out flat on not a soft mattress, but a fairly firm mattress, and lay on your back and just let your body relax. And sometimes it's kind of painful. It's painful for me when I first do it, and my stomach muscles are all pulled tight. And then I finally, after about 15 minutes, all the muscles in my body relax. And I do that, I have to do that a number of times per day to straighten everything out and get those muscles to relax. That's one thing. Another thing, and this is something somebody told me about, I didn't know about it. But anyway, there are these rolls, and the one I purchased myself, I bought it at a department store where they sold some, like, exercise mats. And, you know, the things you squeeze with your hand with springs, that's the kind, you know, exercise stuff for the home. Not big exercise equipment. But anyway, they had this back roll. And it's something a guy told me about because he said he had real back problems and he was really having a lot of problems and he got one of these things. So I'll describe it to you. It's about a foot and a half long. The inner part of it is a 4-inch PVC plastic tubing, heavy duty PVC like you would do plumbing, but 4 inches in diameter. And then cast around this, something that somebody's manufacturing, is this heavy, kind of thick, but still spongy foam-like material that has ridges on it. Okay, and well, what do you do with this? You lay down on the floor, probably best on carpeting, but on a solid floor will work too, and you put it under your back and you roll your back. And what it does is it's kind of like a massage, but what it does is these nubs that are in this form-fitted foam that's on the outside of this PVC tubing digs into your back. And here's what happens when your muscles are not used a lot, especially your back muscles, especially in the wintertime. You're not using your back muscles very much. And so what happens is that this presses in and your muscles accumulate acid. And that's one of the things that when people are very active, like athletes, one of the things their body tunes up to do is to actually remove acid from the muscles. Now, birds, for example, are very good at removing this acid from the muscles. And that's what makes your muscles hurt when you get this buildup of acid in your muscles, and then you have to wait for the blood to flow through and take the acid out. And then your liver and the kidneys filter out this acid. But if you're, especially if you're older, your system's not working as fast as it used to be, and especially if you sit a lot, even if you're young, maybe you have a job where you sit a lot, maybe you're at the computer a lot, or just wintertime where you're sitting a lot, your back gets stiff and it's full of acid. And anyway, this device, this roller thing, as you roll up and down on the floor with your back on towards the floor and this thing between your back and the floor, it's basically getting like real deep fingers into your back, into the muscles in your back, and getting that acid out of there. And at first, it's relatively painful. I mean, it kind of hurts, but after you do this a couple times a day, morning, midday, and then evening before you go to sleep, all of a sudden your back muscles start to loosen up, and this curvature in your back goes away. It's a really a big help. So anyway, That's just a little health tip for the springtime. Let's put it that way. Springtime, and for some of you, is here. For some of you, there's still winter going on. Just quickly, I want to mention that the MR5, my whole house water filter, JMCC water filters, is there's a reduced price right now. It's about what we call the best deal. That's the MR5. Whole house water filter. It comes with the 5 filter elements, along with the ultraviolet final filter, the virus bacteria final filter, which comes with an extra bulb, and then also an extra set of filter elements for the MR5. And it's about $500 off of that. It's called the best deal on my webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com. And also, of course, my gravity water filter replacement elements that are there, the new HI filter elements, which we've been selling now for a couple of years. Really amazing technology. Those are not on sale, but it's like $189 for a 4-pack, and $389, I think it's $389 or $399, for a 10-pack with free shipping. And a very nice sink filter if you need a filter for your kitchen. But if you have the whole house water filter, you don't need any of those, because all the water in your house will be filtered. And just remember, it's the shower. It's the daily shower where you get the royal dose of toxins. And if you know anybody up in that chemical spill area around Ohio, now is the time to get a whole house water filter. And by the way, just on a note of explanation, the dioxins that are the big pollutant there in that toxic spill are removed by the materials that are in my water filters. So at any rate, dioxins are a horrific thing. I've been getting a lot of calls on that. And so the official story is that my filters have not been tested for that specifically. But it is understood that dioxins are removed with the base that's in my water filter elements. And so, yes, it's going to reduce the amount of dioxins in the water. Okay, so on to the topic of the week. Also, mention my new book is on Amazon. It's called The Real History of Man and Earth, Myths, Magic, and Mayhem. It's on Amazon. And for $13.95, it's also available as an ebook on my own webpage, jmccsci.com. Okay, so talking about energy. Okay, this is something that a lot of people really don't have a handle on. And so what I'm going to try and do tonight is explain the whole point of this, by the way, is to explain what it would take to replace our current energy sources with another form of energy. And I'm going to preface this with a couple little pieces of information. The car dealerships that have a brain, let's just put it that way, not all of them do, but the car manufacturers, I should say, not dealerships, because the dealerships just sell the cars. But the manufacturers are understanding that hydrogen is the future of transportation. Okay, so that's really true, and I've been around this topic a lot. If you just compare the infrastructure of gasoline versus in oil that comes up from oil derricks that are out in the, out in the ocean where they're drilling, etc. If you look at the infrastructure, and then you have to bring that oil in and refine it, then you have to put it in trucks and deliver it, and all of this infrastructure is in place, but it's incredibly huge, and that's what a lot of people don't understand, and we really waste a lot of energy. We're addicted to the use of energy, lights on, a lot more lighting than is necessary. All of the appliances that run off electricity, the transportation, people driving up and down the roads, you go to the store to get a thing of ice cream or something, and all of the energy that it takes to just live our daily lives with this modern world we live in, absolutely unbelievable amount of energy being consumed every day. And so if the future is hydrogen, what is it going to take to replace gasoline and diesel with hydrogen? That is the question. And then also I'm going to take a look at electricity and talk about the amount of electricity, and I'm going to do it in terms of train loads of coal. And so that's something that we all can imagine, about a mile and a half long coal train where all of the cars of the train are filled with coal. And this is about a mile and a half long. In fact, I have a video of one on my webpage, if you want to take a look at that. It's a video that I took. I was driving, I think this is out in the middle of Wyoming, and I'm driving along in this road. Nobody else is on the road at all, just myself. And I come up over this bridge, and the bridge swings up and over this railroad track, actually two sets of railroad tracks. And down below me is passing a coal train. And I get out my high-definition video camera, and I put it on the railing of this bridge, and I just film the train. The coal train is coming, car train after car train, and this thing just keeps going on. And these trains have potentially hundreds of cars on them, full of coal, and then eventually another train came the other direction on the other set of tracks right below me, and it was empty. So this train is going to market, bringing coal to various places. Now, I'll be going through some numbers dealing with this. But first of all, I want to talk a little bit about terminology here. And so if you pick up your electric bill, you will see that it is rated, you are charged for kilowatt hours. A kilowatt hour is a unit of energy. And so what does that mean? That means that, here's another example. Let's take a home generator. Okay, and let's say it's a 100-watt generator. It'd be just a little one. And so you have 100 watts of power that you can use. So you could light up, for example, a 100-watt light bulb. Old-fashioned light bulbs, typically 100-watt light bulb. And so if you ran that bulb for 1 hour, it would be using a tenth of a kilowatt for 1 hour. So it'd be a tenth of a kilowatt hour. So you could run that light bulb for 10 hours, and that would be 1 kilowatt hour. That might be a little bit complicated, so let's change the example here. Let's use a 1,000-watt generator, okay? Okay, so a 1,000-watt generator would run 10 light bulbs that are 100-watt light bulbs, the old incandescent 100-watt light bulbs. So you have a panel with 10 light bulbs on it. You start up your generator, the 1,000-watt generator, and 1,000 watts is 1 kilowatt. Now, if you run those 10 light bulbs for 1 hour, you have used 1 kilowatt hour of energy, and it would be billed. And if you're in an average place in the United States, it would cost about 10 cents to operate that generator. This is commercial power. It would cost you about 10 cents to light those light bulbs for 1 hour. Okay, now if you lit them all day, then you would have 24 hours, so that it would cost you $2.40 to light those 10 light bulbs. Okay, and then over the course of the month, your bill builds up. And it turns out that the average home uses about that much energy. And a little bit more, it's about 1.3 kilowatts. In other words, if you had a 1.3 kilowatt generator and running all the time, 24/7, that's about the amount of energy that the average house uses. So it's really not much in one sense, but you put all of the houses together in the United States and it turns out to be a boatload of energy, a lot of energy. And so anyway, this is just to give you some of the terminology. So when I talk about, say, a gigawatt electrical plant, that's the power. That's the power that it's running at. And if you say a gigawatt hour, if you add that hour term at the end, then all of a sudden that's the energy use, and that's based on the amount of time. So if you run a gigawatt electrical generator plant for 1 hour, you have a gigawatt hour of energy, and that's what you would be billed for. Okay, so anyway, with those few things in mind, okay, we'll come back to electricity in a minute. But let's look at gasoline, for example. How much gasoline is used? How much diesel fuel is used? And for transportation, we use those as the kind of the main amount of the main types of energy that are used. Natural gas is also used. Of course, you have electric automobiles, which are powered from electrical generating power plants, not from green energy. But at any rate, in the United States, in I think it was 2022, I should say, the amount of energy used was about 360 million gallons of gasoline per day. Now I'm going to say that again. 360 million gallons of gasoline in a day. That's the average amount of gasoline usage in the United States. And the official number from the Department of Energy is 138 million gallons of diesel fuel used per day. Okay, so what does that really mean? What does that really mean? Well, let's look at the history of gasoline or diesel. Okay, so you have a oil derrick out in the Gulf of Mexico. You may have an oil derrick, a bunch of them on a farm in Oklahoma. You might have some in Texas, North Dakota, or whatever. And they're pumping oil out of the ground, and all this accumulative oil then goes to a refinery where it's broken. The hydrocarbon chains of the oil are broken and then refined, and that produces the gasoline and diesel fuel that we use in transportation vehicles. Okay, so there you're dealing. So let me just look at the gasoline first of all. And I'm going to talk in terms of hydrogen. Okay, so 360 million gallons of gasoline. Now, what I'm going to do here, on all of these examples, I'm going to use rough estimates. And, of course, if you were really a geek, we could get down to some nuts and bolts actually talking about exact measurements. But it's not necessary to give examples. We can use very rough estimates. And so we're going to say that a kilogram of hydrogen in pressurized hydrogen or in what some other storage form, because there are dry forms of hydrogen storage that are in existence now. But anyway, a kilogram of hydrogen, whatever storage form is your choice of storage forms, but a kilogram of hydrogen running either a fuel cell car or a internal combustion engine car with hydrogen, we're going to say that a kilogram of hydrogen is the same, you'll get the same distance, the same work in the car as a gallon of gasoline. A one for one. In other words, 1 kilogram of hydrogen will do the same amount of transportation work as a gallon of gasoline. So we can make a direct translation. Instead of 360 million gallons of gasoline per day, to replace that with hydrogen, we would need 360 million kilograms of hydrogen. Okay, so now let's look at the hydrogen. It takes 50 kilowatt generator running for 1 hour to make a kilogram of hydrogen. This is using the electrolysis method. So in other words, you take water, you put it in through an electrolysis node, which is simply a plus and a minus pole, DC, and it takes water, splits it apart, generates hydrogen, and it takes about 50 kilowatt hours of energy to make 1 kilogram of hydrogen. Now, okay, let's get back to the rates of hydrogen in the United, the rates of electricity in the United States. So 50 kilowatts running for 1 hour is 50 kilowatt hours. And if kilowatt hour is 10 cents, then we're talking $5 a kilogram. So if you connected in, say, a state or a city or wherever, and you plugged your generator of hydrogen into the grid, the amount of electrical cost, if it were 10 cents a kilowatt hour for electricity, would be $5 a kilogram. And so if gasoline is, so let's just pretend it's $5 a gallon, it would cost the same as gasoline, and you get the same distance. The only thing is that hydrogen is much cleaner, and you don't have all of that amazingly complex, extensive infrastructure to take the oil, in the case of gasoline, bring it to a refinery. None of that's there. Producing hydrogen is very simple. And of course, right now, there are companies like Shell Oil making hydrogen out of natural gas, which is not a green process by any stretch of the imagination. So the goal is to get to the point where we're making hydrogen with natural energy sources. And of course, you probably would have guessed that that's where the wing generator comes in, but that's not what I'm going to talk about tonight. And so anyway, the goal is to get the cost of hydrogen down below the cost of gasoline in terms of what you get for transportation. So the federal government has a program that if you can generate clean, green hydrogen, in other words, from a natural energy source, and those natural energy sources would be wind, solar, or hydro. And so hydro is a very viable source of electricity for generating hydrogen, but hydro, really nobody's building big hydro plants anymore. I think the big ones, China is trying to build one. They're the Three Rivers, and they're having a boatload of problems with making a big, big hydro plant. But at any rate, that's where you get your cheapest electricity, is from a hydro plant, and you could potentially make hydrogen for a very low cost. A green hydrogen from a natural energy source. Because what is a hydro plant? The rain fills the reservoir water goes down through the generating plant and generates electricity. It's one of the, besides the cost of the hydro dam, it's really pretty free energy. And so that's a, excuse me for using that term, that's a really a bad term because it has so many strange connotations, but very inexpensive energy in terms of physical cost. But at any rate, of course, the real future will be when we use the wing generator for generating hydrogen, and that's going to happen. Let's just put it that way. Okay, so just a little review here. Let's go back and look at diesel. 138 million gallons of diesel used in a single day on average. You would replace that likewise with, let's just say there's a one-for-one equivalence with a kilogram of hydrogen. So that'd be another 138 kilograms of hydrogen that we would need to replace diesel. And there are companies that are making diesel engine conversions where they're running hydrogen into a diesel engine. It just requires a different carburetor process, but you can use the same block. The big issue with hydrogen is it burns so hot that an average car engine would not make it very far. And so that's why a lot of activity is going on in the diesel world at this point, trying to make everything convert over to hydrogen. But not so much activity in the gasoline car world, although that's starting. That's something where in a couple of years you will be able to buy hydrogen, internal combustion, or fuel cell automobiles that are powered purely on hydrogen. And hydrogen is something like gasoline, where you have power up to the very last drop. As long as you have a little bit of hydrogen in your tank, you can still run on it, just like gasoline. Okay, so the end result is that hydrogen it's going to be the future. But let's look at what it would take to create that hydrogen. Okay, so now I gave the example, take one of my 50-kilowatt wing generators. It could produce, if running at full capacity, 100% capacity, it could produce 1 kilogram of hydrogen per hour. So in a day, it would produce enough hydrogen to fill up a Mariah or one of the hydrogen vehicles, Toyota or the various other companies that are coming online with hydrogen vehicles. You could make enough hydrogen in one day with a 50-kilowatt wind generator to power your car and go probably 400 or 500, 600 miles in a day, every day, basically for free. And so, but let's scale this thing up. What is it going to take to produce hydrogen on the scale necessary to replace that 360 million gallons of gasoline and 138 gallons of diesel fuel? Okay, so let's scale up the generator process here to 200 megawatts. Imagine we can build a wing generator, 200 megawatts, and we can put it in a place where there's very good wind. So the wind is going to allow this machine, this wing generator, to produce hydrogen at a maximum rate all day long. So 200 megawatts divided by 50 kilowatts gives you about 4,000 kilograms of hydrogen per hour. Okay, now if you multiply that by 24 hours in a day, you get 96,000 kilograms of hydrogen per day. Okay, so now we're going to compare this. How many of these 100,000 kilogram per day units would we need to replace 360 million gallons of gasoline per day, or in other words, to produce 360 million kilograms of hydrogen per day? And when you do the math, it turns out to be about 3,600. Now, a 200 megawatt wing generator is a big device. We're talking 500 feet in diameter, sitting out on the edge of, say, San Francisco Bay or on a barge or someplace in a windy area in southern Nevada or the windswept regions of Southern California, or say the Buffalo Ridge in Minnesota, or the Lake Superior, or the other Great Lakes, or the Eastern Seaboard or the Western Seaboard, where we have good wind, or an island like in the Caribbean where they have constant good wind. And so we know where the good wind places are. The question is producing enough hydrogen locally so that we, in fact, are able to come up with this final number. And, of course, I'm just giving examples for the United States. These numbers that I'm using are just the United States alone. So, once again, in review, it would take 3,600 200-megawatt wing generators, all producing hydrogen at maximum rate, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and 365 days per year. It would take that much generation to replace gasoline, and that's going to be a big, big order. And so, anyway, the things, the putting that into motion, they are they're putting those things into motion so that someday that'll happen. And I expect it could actually take place before the year 2030, where we have a good percentage of the world's hydrogen supply coming from local installations producing hydrogen. Okay, so is that an easy task? No, it's not. We can use some of the same infrastructure that already exists for gasoline, And I think what you're going to see also is that electric vehicles are going to go by the wayside. And the biggest reason, although there are many, the biggest reason for the biggest reason for electric cars to go away is that the amount of electrical infrastructure simply is not there to move the electricity to charge the cars. So even if you could generate more electricity, which there is no effort being made to produce more electricity in the United States, that would require doubling or even tripling our current energy output. That means coal, nuclear, natural gas power plants, and other sources of energy, and don't ever expect it to come from solar or three-blade wind turbines. But to provide that amount of energy is just not in the cards. It's just not going to be there. And so to provide that energy and then distribute it on the current grid is at the breaking point. We cannot put any more electricity on the grid. Even if everybody bought electric cars, which they're trying to promote, there's the infrastructure to deliver that electricity on the current grid system is simply not there. It's not going to be there. And so for that reason, electric cars cannot work. There's no future. And you can sell what's happened is up to this point, they haven't sold enough electric cars to make a dent in the national electrical infrastructure that is going to tap into the electric grid too much. But you have crazy programs like in California. Gavin Newsom wants to put in 50,000 electric car charging stations. Well, already LA is hurting. They have to turn off air conditionings. They have rolling brownouts that are targeted brownouts so that you cannot run your air conditioning during the summer months. And so it's simply not going to happen. Electric vehicles are going to go the way of the dinosaur. And you have people like Elon Musk, who before said that hydrogen is ridiculous, is now converting all of his production to hydrogen. It'll be happening in the next couple of years. And so they're understanding that when you get to these big numbers, strange things happen in the world of economics, and sometimes the best laid plans of mice and men simply don't work out. But I knew this for a long time. I knew that hydrogen would be the clear winner, and that's why I put myself in front of it. Okay, so that's talking about hydrogen. I'll come back to that in a little while. But that's the simple story. Once again, it would take 3,600 of these large 200 megawatt wing generators running at full capacity, producing hydrogen on a daily basis, 24 hours a day, to supply and replace the gasoline, just the gasoline, not the diesel. And it would take another about one-third of that, so another 1,200 of these generators generating hydrogen 24/7 to replace all of the gasoline and diesel. Okay, so let me move to electricity now. I'm going to talk in terms of railroad trains of coal. And now the majority of electricity in the United States is produced actually by natural gas. But it's very difficult to for people to understand cubic feet or the other measurements of natural gas. Most people can understand the measurement of or thinking about a train load of coal. And so let's look at a train like in the movie I have on my webpage. It is said that there are between 116 and 130 cars in an average coal train. And so I'm going to just use 100 because it's a nice round number that's very close. And sometimes, just to make a point in physics, you round things off. You don't have to have them exact to give an example for you. Okay, so anyway, Let's take an average train, 100 cars of coal. Each car has 100 tons of coal in it. And so 100 times 100, we have 10,000 tons of coal in a coal train. That's how much coal is there. And it will produce electricity in a 1 gigawatt a 1 gigawatt power plant for a given day. In other words, it'll produce 24 gigawatt hours of energy. And so, okay, that will produce enough for how many houses? Okay, I'm not going to go into that. But anyway, let's take another number here that the United States, this is the 1922 total from the Department of Energy, the United States uses 4,200 billion kilowatt hours of electricity per year. That translates into 11 billion kilowatt hours per day. Okay, so now understanding that a train load of coal will provide a 1 gigawatt coal power plant, the energy required for a given day, without going through all of the mathematical details online, that means that in the United States on a given day, now I'm talking about assuming that all the electricity were made with coal, 450 trains of coal per day to power the United States electrical load. And, of course, it's split, like I say, natural gas. Actually, there's some of it produced with diesel fuel. And there's a certain percentage with what they call renewable energy. Most of that is hydro, that excess natural energy source. And, of course, I already said nuclear and, of course, natural gas. I already said that. And but those are the major sources, and of course coal. And so, but looking at just imagining that all of this electricity is generated by coal, just to give you a feeling for how much energy is spent, 450 trains, 100 cars long, 450 of those trains to generate the electricity every day in the United States. And so that's a good eye into the coal industry and what it would take to replace that. Okay, so the point here is that if you're trying to replace gasoline with EV cars, it's simply not going to happen. You would have to double or even triple to 900 or up to 1,200 trains per day of coal to power electric vehicles, and you may as well just use gasoline or diesel. It's much more effective. It's much much less expensive. And so the other thing with electric is that it's okay if you're driving a forklift or an automobile, but once you get into high power structures, electric vehicles really are not that efficient. They don't go the problem is they don't have the energy density to go that far. Gasoline has a much higher energy density, and diesel even higher in terms of the amount of weight you have to carry to provide the energy you need to move the car. A small car, you can make an electric vehicle that makes sense. But once you get into heavy loads and heavy lifting and heavy transportation, electric vehicles don't cut it with current battery technology. And, of course, that could change someday. Nobody's expecting it to, but we've been surprised before. So anyway, that gives you an idea of the amount of energy we use. Now, take both the gasoline and the diesel and the coal. And let's take this example by looking at coal. You have a coal train with 100 cars. When you burn the coal, 80 of those cars, that energy, the heat from burning those 80 cars of coal, goes right up into the atmosphere. It's lost. It's part of what is known as the Carnot cycle. It's a cycle of energy conversion. And so what happens, if you look at that train, 100 cars, 80 of those cars, the energy just goes right up into the atmosphere. In only 20 of those cars, the actual heat from those 20 cars actually goes into useful work. Running an automobile, toasting your bread, running your electric stove, running the dryer, the clothes dryer, or the dishwasher, or a light bulb, or your computer. Only 20% of that coal actually goes to generating electricity because of what is known as the Carnot cycle. It's a heat engine that is used to convert to energy. And, of course, what happens with the coal? You boil water, you create steam, the steam turns turbines, the turbines turn electric generators, the electric generators then go out on the power line and carry the electric power to your house or business. But 80%, a full 80% of that train load of coal goes right into the atmosphere. It does not produce an ounce of energy. So now, if you go to wind power, where you don't have that issue, there's a certain amount of heating, no matter what energy source you're using. But with a wind energy, you only have to produce 20% of the energy that is produced by burning coal or other high energy content fuels. You only have to produce 20% of that with the wind to match the amount of energy being produced by coal. That's one of the big advantages of the wind generator, is because it can do that. Okay, then looking at the same situation in terms of burning gasoline, etc., you're talking about an internal combustion engine. And in the current stage, hydrogen is not quite as efficient as gasoline. If you add hydrogen to gasoline, it improves the burning capabilities of gasoline. And so you'll see advertisements for hydrogen assist on a gasoline automobile, where you mix in a little bit of hydrogen and it gives you a better burning of the gasoline, and that's what gives you like a 20% improvement in gas mileage. All right, now what I am personally doing with my time when I'm not doing this show or other interviews or running the water filter business is moving into hydrogen, and that is the future in hydrogen production. So that's the goal, is to produce hydrogen from the wind using the patented wing generator, and that's the future. That's where the future of energy lies. Everybody that has a third of a brain in the energy industry knows this, and the writing is on the wall, and it's just on the way. It's just going to happen. But I wanted to give you an idea of the incredible amount of energy that is used. Now, another thing that's kind of hidden here is, let us compare the generation of hydrogen with the procurement of oil. With oil, you have an oil derrick out in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico. Look at the amount of energy that it takes to make that oil derrick. Just to make the oil derrick itself, the welding, the steel, the infrastructure that goes with it, the pipes, the tubing that go down into the ground under the ocean level and drill down, and all the drilling expense, etc. All of this is an expense. It's an expense that hydrogen does not have. With hydrogen, what do you need? You need a water source. You need clean water, but that's not hard to do. You have filtered water. And so what do? You have two electrodes, and that's, of course, a little bit more complicated than that. But that's it. You have a pair of electrodes, an anode and a cathode in a container, and the hydrogen is trapped on one side, the oxygen is trapped on the other side, and that is it. No derrick, no drilling, no infrastructure, no big ship that goes out to the oil, floating oil platform to load up oil, no refinery, no trucks to bring the hydrogen to market. You could have it where it's bringing the hydrogen to market in a truck. But if you compare the infrastructure of oil with hydrogen, there is no comparison at all. And so the oil industry is going to go away, not completely, because it'll still be used. There's still a need for the refineries, etc., in making oil. Diesel will still be used. It'll be phased in over a period of time. But the end result is that in about 7 years, hydrogen will be taking over. Just like digital photography took over photography, you cannot buy a roll of film like the old photovoltaic, the old rolls of photo film like Kodak film that comes in a roll on a celluloid background with chemicals on it. You're not going to find that because digital photography simply took over. And so that's what's going to happen with hydrogen and the wing generator. And the wing generator is the only way to do this. There's no real way on the ocean with solar panels, etc., to create enough electricity to generate the hydrogen that we need. So the wing generator is the only thing out there that will actually do this, that can be scaled up to the very large sizes. Okay, so I just want to remind you, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. There you can find my books, my education package. The grow towers are there where you can grow amazing amounts of food in a very reduced space, reduce the growing time to one-third, use 95% water, less water. And a great product. You can have these in your home or purchase commercial systems, the grow towers on my webpage. And then also remember that the best deal, the MR5 whole house water filter, is on sale. And it's nearly $500 off. And we're doing that. It's actually a stock reduction sale in this economy that we have today, which is slow. I decided to reduce some stock of the MR5 only. So that's on sale. It'll be there maybe, if you're lucky, through this weekend. So they'll go there right away, because as soon as we reduce the stock by a certain amount, that sale goes away, and believe me, it'll never come back. So now is a good time to go and get that whole house water filter, especially in these troubling, toxic times. And then also remember my book on Amazon. Once again, it's called It's called The Real History of Man and Earth, Myths, Magic, and Mayhem. So, very good. Anyway, we'll talk to you next week. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.